Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about technetium scan. I've just been for a technetium brain scan, and I'll give a little bit of a talk about technetium and how it's discovered. So technetium is an element slap bang bit off to the just a little bit off to the left of the periodic table. So it's the in the D block, right in the center of the periodic table. So you've got row of the S block, which has got lithium and beryllium at the start of it, and that's six elements deep going along. And then you have the P block, which is six by five elements. So I'm going to sneeze. And the D block is four elements deep by that's going from the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh period down, and it's telomeres wide. The F block is just got two periods. It's got the sixth and seventh period in the F block going across. That's 14 across. So the D block's in the very center, and technetium's in the center of that. It's a gap. There's an ambulance on who's absolute crapola here. So why I'm talking about technetium is that's they milked some technetium, and I can't quite remember whether it's actually technetium inside you. I think it's technetium 99 star. That means that the actual nucleus there, technetium's in the center there. And I'll tell you a little bit of the story of technetium. So technetium's an element. An element's a type of atom. And it's distinguished, elements are distinguished by having a fixed, so I'll go across here and try my luck further up. An element's got a fixed number of protons. The neutrons can vary, so it's generally a rule of thumb, one as you go along, about one and a half times more neutrons than protons. Interesting as you go further down the periodic table. And a lot of these stars, a lot of the elements produce produced in the periodic table are made in dead and dying stars. So in a dying star, so this is how technetium is made. So we know technetium doesn't occur in nature because it's only got a short half-life of 100 years maximum, stuff they put into you's got hours. So this is one of the advantages of technetium, is that it's ideal. It does its business quickly. It's sort of like you don't want a half-hour scan with a three-year lifespan thing. You want your scan time and your lifespan to be pretty much the same. And so technetium 99 is milked and put into your... So I don't know whether it's technetium 99 or some other thing, because what happens is that when it... becomes radioactive. I'll switch on the light here because it's a bit rainy here. When it becomes radioactive, it changes. I think there's a technetium cow. I'll have a look at it. But we're looking at this molecule, and let's do it going down the in the same row, which is what did that 2 and 5? It's group 7 in the new money. Group 7. And above it is manganese and technetium and ruthenium. I just have to really work out. I'll have to do some computations there to... So it would be borium underneath it, four elements in that group. And going across the periodic table in its group 5 is rubidium, strontium, yttrium. So I've just got to really pay attention here, guys. There's no point telling you doing a podcast here. Just to nail down. So it's yttrium, zirconium, niobium, molybdenum, and technetium. And after that is ruthenium. So that's where it is. That's a molecule which is made by an atom which is artificially made by bombarding it with neutrons. Somehow neutrons, I can't quite get, I'll have to actually look at how that's done in a nuclear reactor. So they get molybdenum in a nuclear reactor. I think probably even it's, I have to see how it's accelerated. But technetium is being detected in stars. It's there's no technetium on Earth because it's only made in nuclear reactors. And, you know, come on, mate. What the fuck are you doing? I'll be with you in a second. I'm going to have to stop this as I move in here to park. So that's technetium. I've just been into a hospital to have a technetium brain scan. I can't tell you what it is. I can tell you what the story is. I want to give you a sort of a background message here to how just parking here what's the overall flavour of the month is. I think Australia spends as much on health as it spends on defence and education. You put those two together, defence and education. So health, that's welfare, you know, pensions, old age pensions, disability pensions, basically looking after our citizens. We spend a huge bucket of money on it. Okay, I'll come back after I've done this errand and talk to you. You can obviously hear the windscreen wiper. Here it is. There's the windscreen wiper off now. Alright, see you later, and I'll be back in a few minutes. So I'm back again after that errand, and on my way home from the hospital, from a technetium scan, just making sure this work vehicle, working, oh, spending a few bingles, it's a P-plater. It's a tradey one, it's sort of the worst thing, getting out of this place. Okay, so technetium. It's got a symbol TE, and it's in the periodic table, it's only discovered. Now, the story of discovery is worth discussing, but we're going to talk about its occurrence in nature, because it is actually seen in stars, and this is variable main branch, asymptotic main branch stars, and these are variable. What they're doing, these stars, towards the end of their life, called dying stars. I don't know if you, a star is always dying. You know, that's my view. It's a young star, but it's still young and dying. So this is a dying star. And so what's happened is it's gone through and it's using up all its fuel. So the fusion reactions that occur are, these are large stars, so they have a CNO cycle. That is carbon, nitrogen, oxygen cycle, which then goes back to carbon and spits off at the helium and in the process of doing it. So protons are added to the carbon 14. So carbon 14 is made by a triple alpha process, and the triple alpha process is this magic godlike process where the actual energy levels are just enough for three heliums to come together to make an alpha, a carbon. That makes it alpha, and about 1% of the energy, 1% of the power that you get out of the sun is generated by the CNO cycle. Let's be bloody careful here. You just can't be careful enough, these people. They come up, and do they actually really mean what they mean by their indicator? Okay. Yep. Okay, so our sun is 1% CNO, or less than 1% CNO, we're not quite sure. I think there's a different type of neutrino coming out of it, that's how I can tell. However, other stars, heavier stars, are all, you know, 5-10% CNO, large amount of their power is CNO cycle. So the carbon builds up, and it burns really quickly, and this CNO cycle is in the Hertzberg-Russell diagram, is the kick-up. The stars suddenly become, don't necessarily increase in temperature, but they increase in light output. So Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, which is a diagram on the bottom axis is the color of the temperature, on the vertical axis is the log of the intensity. So it's log. So log is a way of writing a number. So we have two ways of writing numbers. We can write them in size number. This is something really profound. Or we can write them as a logarithm. A logarithm is this thing is a number is 10 to the something rather is your answer. So your answer is that 10, that something or other, and the answer is 1-to-1 correspondence, and that something or other is the logarithm of it. And it so happens that our numbers that we see every day are almost quasi-logarithmic. That is, a unit of 1,000 is twice as many zeros, or two extra zeros, and the number of zeros is the logarithmic size of it, and so that gives you an idea. So when you say 6-figure, 7-figure, 8-figure, is our way of saying logarithms. And our logarithm is really basic in nature, and if you ever want to do any rate diagrams, it's a log-log diagram. Now, I only feature off in this because I'm just rabbiting away. This is one of the things that really grabs me, is that scientists, or sort of non-scientists who are teachers, they sort of stumble upon expressing things as logs and exams, and students stumble upon, you know, like a good, what can I say? Well, 1 in 20 students would be stumble upon the actual normal logic of using logarithms. Yet the teachers who don't understand it mark them incorrect, even though they are scientifically correct in what they've written. So this happens all the time, unfortunately. Students being correct and the teachers being incorrect, but not having sufficient knowledge to know that they are incorrect and the students are indeed correct. Okay, getting back onto this, how do you have ticking machine made in stars? Well, in these stars, CNO cycle, the O there is oxygen 15, and that's radioactive. It doesn't last, so it decays by an alpha particle. Is that right? Yeah, back to carbon. Okay. However, if it's carbon itself is burning, the carbon can be make oxygen 16, and once you make oxygen 16, something happens. For the first time in a star, you get a moderately high neutron flux. Now, the neutron flux gives you element genesis. So, not by fusion, but by neutron influx. So, a lot of the bottom part of the periodic table is called S process, slow process. A moderate neutron flux over years. So, if you make an element and it's got a lifetime of 100 years, over that 100 years, it's going to have such a long, steady, low neutron flux, it can actually pick up, and it slowly just sweeps the elements up the periodic table. This is S process. There's a thing where there's just an unbelievably high neutron flux, and that's called R process. And that generates another class of elements. Basically on iron, the iron core of the star gets blasted with sudden flux of neutrons in a supernova activity. That's S process. Some of the abundance of elements are S process. And finally, there's the neutron star collisions. It's just this neutrons going to bloody neutrons in a huge flash, and that produces just an unbelievable amount of our periodic table. Most of the gold and a lot of the the very heavy, rare elements, a lot of the uranium, that type of stuff, is made from neutron star collisions. That's all new. This is all knowing that. But the interesting thing is that some of this technetium has been made because there's molybdenum, and it's the standard thing. It's the standard thing that a lot of elements are made which are unstable, and they are made and they decay before more neutrons can give it. So you're only left with it. Surprise, surprise, long-lived. If you're on a piece of space rock that's been around it for 1 billion years, right, roughly. Oh, Dad, what's going on? This is absolutely crazy. What the heck? Oh, there's a car breaking down here, isn't there? Shit. Something's happening. Who knows? What the fruit? Oh, there is a... Got the hazard lights on. Oh, there's been a bingle. Far out. Not happy people. Yeah, I'm looking at this, must admit, road rage is sort of the version of this before. I don't know, either I'm a better driver or something like that. I haven't seen road rage for years. Not even an example, but okay, getting back on it. The important thing is that you've got these large stars towards the end of their life. They're burning the carbon to make oxygen, and when they do start to go up, there's this huge general flux. They're very large. Now, a large star doesn't mean there's more mass. No, there's no way. Once a star goes off, its mass decreases all the time. Its mass gets blown away with the solar wind, blowing its atmosphere away, and also the mass is converted to energy. So the mass is always dropping down. So a large star is not a more massive star. The gravity is not more on the large star. So a large star with high mass has got more gravity, but as it ages, the gravity tweaks and melts away as it gets turned into energy. That's sort of an interesting thing to contemplate in terms of general relativity. But in these asymptotic main branch stars, which are producing the technetium, something fantastic happens. Because what happens is the fusion and all the action happens in the core, and there's no reason for anything heavy like iron or something like that to float to the surface. Because there's some, just for instance, it's got a density of water, a viscosity of water, but no, convection. And convection layers are really complex. So, now, what happens is if you were to throw a anvil into a star, it would sink down to the core and you'd lose it, and it would all get mixed up, it would be dissolved in the heat of the core. However, what happens in these asymptotic main branch stars is that they convulse and their core shuts down and it pushes, blows out to the outer fraction of the star. It becomes deeply convective and the star churns. It's like a, you know, it's incomprehensible just to think of all the plasma moving around. And the technetium that's made in the core gets put to the surface and then emits light and comes to us in our telescopes, and we say, aha, I can see technetium coming out of my laboratory, and also in the universe, technetium, no technetium on Earth, but in these weird stars, I can see them, and I can see on the surface. And it's not that I know it's convulsing and there's technetium on the surface. Technetium on the surface is telling us of the hydrodynamics of a star, even though it is just a point, and it's just coming out to us with basically a coloured periodic table coming to us. But we can see all this coming along, and we know that this technetium must have a high neutron flux, because this is how we make the technetium in our nuclear reactors. And I really do think technetium 99 star, which is radioactive, I think now, what I think it is it's radioactive molybdenum, and the When it turns into technetium, which would be by beta decay, wouldn't it? Electron beta decay comes out. It turns into 99 star. The technetium 99 star goes through you, emits the gamma ray, and then the technetium 99, which has got a much longer radio lifetime. So I think it's doubly radioactive. So that's what happens. So we see technetium in space, and we are making technetium by nuclear reactors. Look, I'll have to do this in two episodes. The way technetium was discovered was the greatest heist Italian mafia job in all history, because the Italians grab the laurels of before World War II discovering technetium from the Americans by convincing the Americans to post them a molybdenum sheet from their cyclotron, which had become radioactive. It's coming out here, mate. And it went in the post. The US Post delivered it, and it got steamed across. I don't think it would be air. I suppose it might be air. I suppose, look, I do believe a lot of it would have been air posted, as you mentioned back then, into it. Unwrap it, dip it in a few chemicals, identify the technetium-99. Thank you very much, United States. All that, they were interested in the transuranic elements, the doing big stuff, and people were aware of this. They identified technetium-99. They actually grabbed it there. Now, the story of this entire thing is the story of a system, a large Australian system, which is creaking out. Now, the thing is, I'm having my technetium as a prelude to my PET scan, which is a positron one. Technetium, I think, is a gamma ray source. And I'm having it now. But the reason I'm having it now is that the technicity, fluorine, antimatter machine in Australia had broken down. Its conveyor belt had broken, and so they had to wait for parts and all this stuff. Crap. And so what else? Some lift in the hospital had broken. One of the two lifts are broken, so I had to wait there. And then, finally the, parking validation machine had broken, so I had to go to another part of the hospital. And so this is an overall, and the hospital is being pulled down and being replaced with a new one. But it's part of this good infrastructure put in, but it only lasts a certain amount of time. So it's sort of one of these things. Do you invest in big budget ribbon cutting projects where you open new buildings, open blah blah blah, but does it mean that the overall thing that you produce is unserviceable? So it's no doubt a very high stuff. I turned up at 7 o'clock in the morning. And then there's this whole waiting room, chock-a-block, as we say in Australia, full of patients waiting for their scans. And I'll go into telling you what a technetium-99 scan is. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll be back looking after my family. I think it's 10 bloody o'clock at the moment. Bye for now. This is the next section on a rolling podcast on the technician brain scan. And what's happened is that I talked about it while driving home. Had to do an errand while running home, so that was 2 10-minute sections. And I talked a bit about where technetium was. Technetium. So it's T-E-C-H-N-E-T-cium. So it's technetium. Technetium. And I'm going off to visit a friend now, so I'll have about a few more minutes to talk. So what I was talking about is the way it was generated from molybdenum made in these stars. And this is slow-cooked neutrons. So what happens is the neutrons sort of bump things further up the periodic table, increase their isotopic mass, they go undergo beta decay, and slowly walk their way up the periodic table. And this is done very slowly. Of course, slow-cooked stuff is anything that's unstable falls apart, so you can actually sort of imagine you can push things up the periodic table as long as everything in the chain is long-lived. And one of the things which isn't long-lived is that technetium. And that decays. I suppose it would decay back down to molybdenum or something like that eventually. I don't know how. It's not... it doesn't undergo fission. It will go back to, I suppose, molybdenum 99. Difficult to think about what it would do when it decays on its path. So in general, there's no technetium in nature, but you do see it in these stars, which go in the slow cook phase when they start to burn up their carbon. When they burn up the carbon, they start to produce a very large flux of neutrons. So this is a slow neutron process, and these stars convulse, so their inner core gets pushed out to the surface. We can actually observe technetium out in space. So we can't find it on Earth, but we can actually look up at these stars in the sky. And occasionally one in every million stars, I suppose, will be a technetium star producing it. Now, we should go back. So how it's done at the moment is we have our neutron nuclear reactors, and we have molybdenum, and we fire neutrons at it. And that molybdenum, which is one proton short, it does some sort of beta decay, I suppose. That is, it loses an electron and an antineutrino. Comes technetium 99, and we use that in our hospitals. Now, the story of how it was discovered is a great one. So, technetium, they knew it was a hole, and a lot of people claimed discovery of it, but actually isolated every other sort of element. So it remained found, undiscovered, way up to 1936, when the Americans had produced a accelerator, sort of a compact circular accelerator at Berkeley, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in California. And what they'd do is they'd get an ion and accelerate it to such high speed, a proton at such high speed, that they could slam it into a nucleus and produce a whole lot of interesting chemistry there. And back at this stage, the Italians were pretty good. They had Fermi and a few other people. And in Sicily, at the University of Palermo, there was a someone called Perrier. I remember his name. Gee, I'm just struggling to remember things. Someone else. But they went over to the United States and dropped in on Seaborg. These are really famous people in nuclear physics. And said, hey, mate, can you give us a piece of your hot nuclear reactor to look at? So couldn't give them at the time, and so afterwards, when they were taking it apart, they gave them a molybdenum foil. The Yanks actually sent the molybdenum up back to Italy, Sicily, and there you have it. They discovered technetium. So it's the one of the elements sort of posted out of the United States, but discovered in Italy, in Sicily. So I don't know how many big discoveries came out of Sicily, but it's a pretty interesting overall story. And that's essentially what happens now, is that they make radioactive molybdenum by putting it in a high neutron source. And with the high neutron source, the molybdenum, activated molybdenum, is oxide, sticks to alumina. So there's zeolite alumina salt, clay, with many, many little bits and holes. I've done a zeolite and sodalite story. Lots of huge surface area. They wash it in and it sticks. And they make a radioactive molybdenum 99 source. It radiates with a beta particle going out, and this actually pumps out some is making technetium 99. Now technetium 99 has a I've got to really think about how this operates. It's a slightly different ion. It's a bit more water soluble. So when they have this basic clay and wash salt water through it, saline solution. It's only saline. Is the stuff why it's called saline? It's not. It doesn't need the salt to dissolve. It needs the water to dissolve. But you need the salt so it can be injected into you. This is equivalent to whatever this is washed through all the time. So what happens is that after so many minutes, you can pump so much water, salt water, through this clay, and it will drip out the other end with the radioactive material dissolved, ready to be injected. And this is quite an interesting way of doing it, and that's called a molly cow. So you have the little molly cow, and you basically, I think, you know, what you do is you bring in the, I was told to be asleep during it, so I didn't wake up on the move. This is something we'll have to discuss a bit later. They come in and they inject saline into you. Saline goes to the molly cow, a cow, and comes out of the molly cow into you as the radioactive material. So that's how you get technetium 99. So technetium 99, depending on how you do it, it's 99M or 99 star. It's metastable, i.e. that will produce a gamma ray, simply because the actual nuclei are in quantum mechanical states, and there's actually, the proton is not in a little circle, the actual proton actually is distributed throughout the entire nucleus, and it has to be folded to have symmetry patterns. And the way it transmits from molybdenum to technetium, it does it in such a way that it is radiatively forbidden to actually drop down. There would be some symmetry rule which is violated. And so it's got a longer lifetime, half-life of a few hours. And so you inject this technetium 99 into someone, within 24 hours, it's all gone. So what that means is that you've got the radioactive half-life up at the level of your detection level at your... After. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.